Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Padavaraja Kacharya Sarasati Srima. It's by grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Nityalila Pravisaram, Vishnu Pad, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, Ki, Sri Sri Panchatattva Ki, Sri Sri Radha Madhavasta Saki Binda Ki, Sri Sri Prahlad Maharaj Ki, Sri Sri Nisringa Bhagavan Ki, Sri Mayapur Dham Ki, Ganga Mayi Ki, Nityananda Prabhu Ki, all prema. All glories to the assembly. All glories to Sri Guru and all of Vaimini Ekadasi Ki, Sri Varaha Dev Bratta Ki. Okay. So today we're on 12, 13, and 14. This is the second to last day. So let's see what we can do. Let's chant mantra 12. Andam tama pravishanti ye sambhutim pasate tato bhuyai vate tamo yau sambhutam pata. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance. And still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. So, the words asambhuti refers to those who have no independent existence. Sambhuti is the absolute personality of Godhead, who is absolutely independent of everything. We've talked a little bit about that before. Krishna is the origin of the powers delegated to the demigods. So therefore, if you just worship the demigods and you fail to worship Krishna, then you don't get out of this material world. Prabhupada makes another point here that definition of the absolute by negation is not complete. So that path, you can, by your own speculation, ultimately come to the point of realizing that you're not this body. 1990, elimination. I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not that. You inspect all the 24 different material elements and you come to the conclusion that as a living being, you're not any of those things. And you're therefore not part of this material world either. So you can get to that point of detachment from matter by the strength of your own speculation. But that negation is not, it doesn't give puna, full knowledge. It eliminates some aspects of illusion, but it does not bring you to the point of puna, or puna, of realizing the completeness of the absolute. You've just eliminated some aspects of illusion, that's all. But you haven't found out who you are, and who is in control of it. So that remains a mystery. But if you remain attached to that negative process, then you'll never understand Krishna. To go to the point of understanding the absolute, you have to actually get input from a higher source. So such negative qualities are simply reversals of relative material qualities, and are therefore also relative. You're just eliminating illusion, but you're not looking at reality. You know? So I'm skipping quite a bit of this stuff because we've got a lot to cover today. The Sri Upanishad therefore instructs we should not seek temporary relief of our difficulties by worshipping dependent demigods who can bestow only temporary benefit. And then Prabhupada goes on, quotes Bhagavad Gita about worship of the demigods. Moon worshippers can go to the moon, sun worshippers to the sun. Modern scientists are now venturing to the moon with the help of rockets, but this is not really a new attempt. With their advanced consciousness, human beings are naturally inclined to travel in outer space and reach other planets, either by spaceships, mystic powers, or demigod worship. And in the Vedic, it's interesting, Prabhupada said, in the Vedic scriptures, it is said that one can reach other planets by any one of these three ways. But the spaceships that he's referring to that can actually reach other planets are not the little bits of the tin cans that have been manufactured here on planet Earth. There are actually spaceships in other parts of the universe, and different personalities do travel in them, but they're of a different kind of construction from what we've got here. But there are, you know, different ways of going to other planets, and people always desire that. Why? Anybody want to say why? Yeah, they want some improvement in their sense gratification. On this planet, you're very limited in what you can do, where you can go. So natural thing is to want to have a better standard, go higher. And then you read in the Vedic literature, yes, that some planets like this, you live for 1 million years or 10 million years, like that. Oh, very nice. So then people endeavor for that. Yes, Brahma.
It appears that our philosophy facilitates even the astral travel, but Sputnik, what we call it, these people from other planets coming to the Earth planet. But when people speak about it,
aliens,
yeah. Somebody may have an experience or not, but sometimes people, they speak like that, and I noticed that we really minimize it. I mean,
Yes. Well, Prabhupada never put very much emphasis on those things. They can serve a purpose. Sariputta Prabhu produced a book called Alien Identities, where he has a book called Alien Identities, which the first half of the book is a compilation of all the different aspects of so-called UFOs, unidentified flying objects, and alien encounters and experiences, taken many anecdotal accounts, plus, you know, some recorded accounts here and there, and all the different manifestations of so-called alien encounters. And then what he does is that he compares that to descriptions of space travel and people from other planets that are there in the Bhagavatam. Yeah, I mean, the Bhagavatam immediately starts talking about other planets. Immediately. First canto, so anyway. So, how to get people to accept that? So, Sariputta was looking for a way which people could make the leap, so to speak, into accepting that, you know, there are other planets that are actually occupied by living beings more elevated than ourselves. Because that's an essential ingredient. If you want to actually read the Bhagavatam, you've got to accept life on other planets. So he wanted to try to give something tangible that people could compare it to. And so, you know, he compiled all this information. And there are many parallels between the descriptions of modern day UFO, you know, experiences, and the experiences that are described in the Bhagavatam. And he gives many different examples, just like the maidservant of Usha. Yeah? It says she traveled through the airways, and she abducted Aniruddha. So alien abductions. Yeah? Somehow or another, he was transported right through the walls of the palace and taken instantly to the castle of the city of Banasura. And he didn't know how he got there. He woke up in the morning, he didn't know where he was. Yeah. So Chitralekha, she had this ability to travel in the airways and actually abduct him without him even waking up. But that's, you know, it's very, that's one of the prominent UFO claims, alien abductions. So these things are there, and you can use them for a certain kind of preaching. But Prabhupada never emphasized that, because he didn't want to get people just interested in interplanetary travel. When he was in Washington in 1976, there was a fellow that came. He wrote a book. His name was Bill Soor, and he had written a book called The Fourth Kingdom. And the whole thing was about how the human race, we were living in a limited and finite cosmos, and at some point the sun was going to burn itself out, and then the whole cosmos is going to die. So the human race is going to be, you know, extinct. So if we want to save the human race, we have to start right now, developing the technology, to build some gigantic spacecraft, like Noah's Arks, and we'll send them out to different parts of the universe, and maybe one of them will find another planet that's suitable for sustaining human life, and then we can repopulate, and the human human beings will not become extinct. So this was the sum and substance of his whole book, and he thought this was very far, you know, broad-minded, far-reaching, you know, thinking. And then so when he met the devotees, and they showed him a Bhagavatam, he bought a Bhagavatam, and he read about people in outer space. So he got very excited. So then Prabhupada was coming, so they invited him to come and meet our spiritual master. He's the author of this book. So then when he came, he was very full of himself. And he starts talking about all his, you know, speculations. And then Prabhupada told him, you know, doesn't matter what planet you go to, any planet in this universe, Abrahma, Bhuvana, Loka, they're all places of suffering and they're all going to be finished. So he said, why do you just want to go to another planet, a material planet? Why don't you go to the spiritual planet of Krishna? Because once you go there, you don't have to come back. So Prabhupada was able to go way beyond anything in his imagination. So that kind of quieted him down, because his whole book became insignificant. So Prabhupada was looking at a broader picture, and he didn't want people to divert their attention to minor things. This is something like, you know, we don't get into a big thing about mystic powers. You know, although there are, you know, descriptions of so many wonderful things that are there in the Shastra of people with mystic powers, the yogis and the, you know, the sages. But we don't put any emphasis on that, because that's another sidetrack, that's all. Yes, Guru.
Krishna says that worshipping demigods is in the mode of goodness. It seems contradictory with this.
Well, okay. Nothing is pure in the material world, and because there's some motivation. It's mode of goodness in the sense that you're accepting there's a higher authority and you're following a regulated an authorized process to worship them. But because it's motivated by material gain, that's in the mode of passion. See, action in the mode of goodness is that which where you desire no reward or return. That's real charity in the mode of goodness. Mode of passion, you give, but you want something back. So it's passionate from that sense. But because you're worshipping the demigods, it requires a little goodness. Yeah, an acceptance of some higher authority. You know, you have to follow the prescribed duties that are there. So let's go on then. The whole universe is covered by the gigantic material elements, just like a coconut covered by a shell and half filled with water. Since its covering is airtight, the darkness within is dense. Therefore, the sun and moon are required for illumination. So therefore, Prabhupada's saying, this is why it says that those who worship the demigods remain in the darkest regions of the universe, because the whole universe is a dark region. There are no illuminated areas except if you land on the sun planet, and that's also temporary. So everybody's in darkness, that's the whole point. The biggest and highest planet in the Brahma Jyoti. So you should go outside the universe, Prabhupada says. And then there's the Brahma Jyoti, then that's filled with Vaikuntha Lokas, and the biggest planet is Krishna Loka, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna himself, resides, and Lord Sri Krishna never leaves Krishna Loka. But he's expanded into all the other areas of his creation, or his energies. He's personally present there, but he's still in his own abode. So we've talked about that before. There are many pseudo-worshippers who become religionists only for the sake of name and fame. Such pseudo-religionists do not wish to get out of this universe and reach the spiritual sky. They only want to maintain status quo in the material world under the garb of worshipping the Lord. Who are these people? Is Prabhupada speaking about somebody in particular here? Anybody? Who's Prabhupada referring to here? It will become more apparent later on. The impersonalists support the atheists by stressing the impersonal aspect of the Lord. Thus far, we have not come across any mantra in Sri Upanishad in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is denied. So they like to use these verses to indicate an impersonal absolute, but Prabhupada is making the point that none of them deny the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they misuse it. It's just they have a limited understanding. And he says that he can run faster than anyone. It's said there. So those who are running after other planets are certainly persons. And if the Lord can run faster than all of them, then how can he be impersonal? So the Upanishads indirectly but clearly indicating the existence of a Supreme Person. But the Mayavadis, because they have limited understanding and they don't follow the authorized acharyas. And this is a point that Prabhupada hammers like anything in the rest of these purports. That following the authorized acharyas to understand, and that there are many cheaters who mislead people because they don't follow the acharyas and they declare themselves to be acharyas, and so they and their own disciples got to hell. So we'll look at that. That's going to come up. The ignorant pseudo-religionists and the manufacturers of so-called incarnations who directly violate the Vedic injunctions are liable to enter into the darkest region of the universe because they mislead those who follow them. These impersonalists generally pose themselves as incarnations of God to foolish persons who have no knowledge of Vedic wisdom. Yeah, this is the point, that if you know the Vedic, you won't get fooled if you hear it from, you know, comes down from Krishna himself. Aparoshaya, it comes down from the Supreme and it comes through an authorized disciplic succession. If you don't hear from somebody in that succession, then you'll only get mental speculation and you'll get the wrong conclusion. And then you'll create offenses and you'll go to hell. And one such mudha we discussed, on September 7th, 1976, we were having a discussion. There was an article that Prabhupada had received in Detroit in June of 76 about Sai Baba. And it was critical of Sai Baba, said that they thought he was a phony. So Dr. Kapoor was Prabhupada's godbrother, RBL Kapoor. Yes, please.
What means phony?
Phony means fake. Cheating. So Dr. RBL Kapoor had come with a friend of his to visit Prabhupada. They were old friends from Allahabad in the 1930s. So Dr. Kapoor's friend asked Prabhupada what he thought about Sai Baba. Prabhupada was dismissive, saying that Sai Baba has no shastric basis, simply jugglery. Dr. Kapoor added, no avatar has so far declared that I am an avatar. So what is an avatar, Prabhupada asked. He has nothing on the shastra, basically. And anyone who has no shastric basis, he is useless. Yashastrim vidim utsrija vatate karmakarata nasidim nasasidim avatnoti. He can cheat so many fools and rascals, but it has no meaning. That is described in the Bhagavatam about this kind of guru. They have been condemned in the Bhagavatam. Looking at Pradyumna, he told him, I think you'll find out at the end of the 24th chapter, 8th canto. Then he continued, they have been condemned. Now, what is the benefit? From the rational point of view, suppose he can manufacture some gold. That is his jugglery. He can manufacture some gold, so far I have heard. I have not seen. Well, I don't know. He does some kind of trick, Dr. Kapoor said. Gopal Krishna added that Sai Baba does other kinds of magic and blesses sick people who apparently get cured. Prabhupada didn't find that very impressive. So that is done by medical men also. So what is the excellence? So I chipped in with a story that I'd read in the recent edition of The Blitz, in which that's one of these low-class newspaper, sensationalist newspapers in India, The Blitz, in which a man traveling in his car was hit by a train. He was thrown from his car to the left-hand side. The train came to a sudden standstill just as it hit the car. So then he went to see Sai Baba, and then Sai Baba looked at him and he said, "Oh, you have been in an accident and your car was hit by a train, but I stopped the train and I threw you to the left and therefore you were not injured." So this was one of the, you know, mystical things of Sai Baba. But Prabhupada still wasn't impressed. If he can do so, can he save him from death if he's so powerful? Immediately Prabhupada sort of, all right, you saved a man from, you know, being run down by the train, but can you save him from death? No. Cheap tricks. That's all it is. Just cheap tricks. Dr. Kapoor was also disparaging. He laughed and said, "Oh, that's very easy. I can also do that. I know that trick." Prabhupada smiled. "That chai?" Gopal Krishna was curious. "Oh, what is the trick?" "I'm not going to tell you," Dr. Kapoor returned, laughing loudly. While Prajuna continued to seek out the verse Prabhupada wanted from the Bhagavatam, I reiterated another story I had heard about some scientists who wanted to test Sai's claims. They're trying to get him to give some examples. So he refused. Then he produced a nut in his hand. Then he closed his fist and opened it again, and the nut was there, but this time it had a gold cross attached to it. Dr. Kapoor's friend said that the famous Indian magician, P.C. Sarkar, could do much better tricks. He actually came to see Prabhupada the following month after this conversation and did some tricks. He was making coins appear from Prabhupada's ears and all kinds of stuff. Prabhupada agreed, yes, P.C. Sarkar, he was going on the London on a cycle in London, ordinary street he was going, and his eyes were bound up. He was blindfolded and he was riding a bicycle around the streets of London. Yeah, it was all filmed. Everybody has seen. Pradyumna finally found the verse Prabhupada had requested and he read it out. Achakshur antasya yata grani kritastata janas janasya vidusho buddho guru tvam arka drika drik sava drisham samikshano Vrito guru na svagatim bubutsatam. As a blind man being unable to see accepts another blind man as his leader, people who do not know the goal of life accept some guru who is a rascal and a fool. But we are interested in self-realization, therefore we accept you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as our spiritual master, for you are able to see in all directions and are omniscient like the sun. That's 8.24.50. Prabhupada stressed the point that Krishna is the original guru. He instructed Lord Brahma, Vivashvan and Arjuna. He is Adi Guru, so instead of this tricky jugglery guru, why not approach Krishna? Therefore, Achakshur Andha. He then had Prajumna repeat the Sanskrit, and Prabhupada tipped his head. Ah. Avidusha Abudho Guru. You are a fool. So for them, all gurus, this Bal Yogeshwara, he was another popular guru of the time, little fat Indian kid that went running around claiming that he was Krishna, Bal Yogeshwara, and others, foolish guru for the fools. Bhagavan himself is giving the simple path, Manmana, but they go in a roundabout way. By thinking of him, they gradually become devotee, but they give up the simple path. If things are very easy, then why do they go a roundabout way? Bhagavan Swayam, Manmana Bhavabad Madbhakto Madjati Mam Namaskaru Mamabhashasi Asamshaya. What I mean to say is that they give up the simple path. See my Murti, think of me, and become my devotee. Worship him, give him a leaf, a flower, This is not at all difficult. Then offer obeisances. So they've given all this up for what? Fools. I went to see the Ramakrishna mission head, Prabodhananda Swami. I think this prophet was in New York, if I'm not mistaken. So just by seeing me, he immediately said, oh, Thakur, that means Ramakrishna, was formerly Gaurahari. This Ramakrishna Thakur, he was formerly Gaurasundara. Just see how foolish. He said Gaurasundara preached Krishna Bhakti, then Ramakrishna preached Kali Puja in Kali Yuga. He is such a fool that Gaurasundara preached, whomever you meet, teach them about Krishna, and now in this birth he is preaching Kali worship. Prabhupada said this was proof that the intelligence of such persons is destroyed by worshipping the demigods. Kali is a demigod. They worship Kali. This is one of the Ramakrishna Mission's big things, because it's a typical thing in West Bengal. They're all Shaktas. They all like to worship Kali because they want material gain. So this person has become so foolish, his obsession with Kali, that even he tries to claim Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the same person, Ramakrishna. Now then he worshipped Krishna, now he's worshipping Kali. Same thing. Prabhupada said this was proof. It is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Shastras. Kamaishtaishtaya Rita Jnana Prapajantanya Niyadevata. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires worship the demigods. So such people whose intelligence are destroyed are saying this. We simply preach this. Chant Hare Krishna. We don't produce any gold. Just chant Hare Krishna. In private as in public, Prabhupada spoke for the truth for the benefit of all. Dr. Kapoor and his companion appreciated Prabhupada's nonsense approach to preaching, and after taking a little prasadam, then they took their leave. That wasn't the end of the Sai Barbaras episode. We'll have a bit more later on. But Prabhupada also mentions there about Vivekananda, and that's more specifically who he's talking about. In these purports, when he criticizes the impersonalists, the false gurus, the cheaters, this is who he's talking about. So anyway, he's saying that the actual goal is how to obtain real and permanent life. Yeah. So demigods are useless for that, impersonalists are useless for that. The path of salvation fully depends on knowledge and detachment gained from serving the Lord. Yeah. Knowledge and detachment. By a false display of religious sentiments, they present a show of devotional service while indulging in all sorts of immoral activities. Now Prabhupada's getting more specific here. This is the cheaters that he's talking about. Under the shadow of philanthropic activities disguised as religious principles, they do all kinds of immoral activities. He's specifically talking here about the Ramakrishna mission. They ignore the Vedic injunction, Acharyopasana. One must worship the Acharya. And Krishna's statement in the Gita, Evam Parampara Praptam, this supreme science of God is received through the disciplic succession. So this is a point Prabhupada emphasizes again and again. If you want knowledge, you must go to the Parampara. And these cheaters, they ignore that and concoct their own ideas, become so-called acharyas, but they do not even follow the principles of the acharyas. These rogues are the most dangerous elements in human society, because there is no religious government, they escape punishment. So Prabhupada saying if there is a religious government, then such persons would not be allowed to flourish. That's one of the duties of the acharya, to cut down the fake gurus and incarnations and avatars. Who was the one that, who can think of a story from Krishna's pastimes? Pondraka. Yes. Prabhupada said that actually about Sai Baba. Chop his head off, that's it. But that's the only way to deal with them. Pseudo-religionists are heading towards the most obnoxious place in the universe after the completion of their spiritual master business, which they conduct simply for sense gratification. I mean, Prabhupada is speaking so heavily you know, this is a book that we distribute to people who don't know anything about spiritual life at all. And Prabhupada just gets right into it. You know, these are dangerous elements, you know, pseudo-gurus, going to the obnoxious, most obnoxious place in the universe. You know. So anyway, on with the... So this is the fate. This is Sai Baba. Again, he's another example. So continuing on, in the evening we had another discussion about Sai Baba with Prabhupada based on this article that I had mentioned in the Blitz. So they had a very favorable article on Sai Baba making outrageous claims about his so-called godhood. This evening, Pradyumna and I met with Prabhupada for a short while to discuss the writing of a letter challenging the yogi on various points. So Prabhupada got so annoyed by the whole thing that he decided he was going to challenge him. So I read out some of the passages from the newspaper. So this is the kind of nonsense that they come out with. Baba personifies this philosophy that God in man and man in God is the basis of religion. As he told me, God is man and man is God. All of us have something of God, the divine spark within us. All men are divine, like myself, with the spirit embodied in human flesh and bone. The only difference is that they are unaware of this godhood. Such a jugglery of words, and Prabhupada was quite disgusted. Unaware. So God, how is he unaware? Just see. They make God so cheap, I said. Prabhupada's lips curled a little. The rascal. And the next part is even worse, I said, and continued to read. For the doubting or confused minority to which section I then belong, this is the author. Swamiji has this message. Those who want to secure pearls from the sea have to dive deep to fetch them. It does not help them to dabble amongst the shallow waves near the shore and say that the sea has no pearls and that all stories about them are false. Likewise, if a person wants to secure the love and grace of the avatar, he must also dive deep and get submerged in Sai Baba. Then only will he become one with me and carry me in his innermost heart. This is Sai Baba talking. Right? Everyone can say like that, Prabhupada responded. What have you done as God? And in other words, anybody can talk flowery words. He reiterated another quote from the paper, because it said, God is an Indian. This was the advertisement, God is an Indian. And shook his head, making things very complicated, he said. And then he asked, so, anything about us? The writer, he has criticized, God is an Indian, that is a criticism? No, this is a glorification, I answered. He's a nationalist, so he's saying, oh, God is an Indian, because it's supposed to be very good. Oh, in our country, yeah, God is one of us. How can God be an Indian, Prabhupada said. Then how is he God? God must be for everyone. I paraphrase more of the article. He says here that he is the image of Krishna incarnate. They say that he is Shiva and Parvati combined together. He certainly embodies both masculinity and femininity. They say he's, what they call those? Hermaphrodite. Hermaphrodite. He has both sexual organs. So, he's Krishna, as we read of him in the scriptures, must have resembled Swamiji. His walk is that of a dancer floating in a graceful movement. This is the propaganda, right? Prabhupada shook his head some more and said that he'd heard enough. He moved to the garden and he told Pradyumna, so you write. I have already told you. I cannot speak now, so you write. I have given you all the hints. Pradyumna began underlining various statements in the article and formulating a response. Before leaving, Prabhupada alone in the garden to relax, he went over some of the points. Avyaktim Vyaktim Arpanam. He says, I come from the formless. This is another statement. But Krishna says, anyone who says that is a buddhayaha. Prabhupada gave him another argument to use. Besides that, he says in another place that as they pass through our existence, in the past we existed, now we exist, in the future we shall continue. Then, when he becomes avyakta, past, present, and future, there are all three times. So if every time he is a person, then when does he become an imperson? He's supposed to be Krishna, but he's contradicting himself. Right? And God is an Indian. That is also rascaldom. He says, God says, Sava Yonishu Kantaya Sambhavanti Mutayaya Aham Bija Pradapita. So how is he an Indian? Throughout the whole universe, as many forms of body there are, he is the Father. So how is he an Indian? Prabhupada predominantly quoted from the Gita 9:11, and Prabhupada added, Tanum Ashritam. This concept of Indian, European, is there because you are a mudha. Just directly challenging, charging directly that you are a mudha, you are a rascal. Immediately, let him speak and send it to the newspaper that this letter we have sent challenging this rascal, let him reply. If he does not reply, silent, then that means he accepts that he is a rascal. Prabhupada was fired up. Pradyumni-radit Sai Baba claims that self-realization is God-realization. Prabhupada responded strongly, as if talking to Baba himself. But you are not self-realized. You are a madman, rascal. How you can be self-realized? A madman cannot be self-realized. When I observed that if Sai Baba was Krishna before, then how could he be disagreeing with what the Bhagavad Gita says? Prabhupada tacked on his punchline. So you are not Krishna, because if you were Krishna, then how can you be a rascal? Krishna is not a rascal. We left the garden and presumably got busy writing up all the points into a letter. So that's the first verse that we're doing today. And this is tacked on by VTE. One comment Prabhupada said that, why is it that we see that they're making spiritual advancement, the impersonalists? The Prabhupada says, no, they don't make any spiritual advancement. They come down. Don't you see this impersonalist, Vivekananda? He took sannyas, but he came down to the hospital making. So they are not advancing. They are coming back and falling down. Now they come down, and then they defame Narayan, that Narayan has become Daridra. So they are saying that Narayan is Daridra. Poor Narayan. Now, don't you see, Narayan is standing on every street corner. This is their bogus. So Prabhupada was talking in that purport specifically about Vivekananda and the rascals in the Real Krishna Mission. Any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhupada.
Atmadatva before the Johnny's gone. He went tour around the East, around the India, to find the Guru, and he went to Atmadatma. So he's writing this in Atmadatma.
So he went to Sai Baba.
To Sai Baba, and yeah. He had a personal darshan, what was like a big deal, you know, to get such. And he saw how he's doing his tricks. He put him in the hand like some gold or something, ash, and then Atmadatma said, okay, I know these things, you know, show me where is your bottle. What bottle? Show me where is your bottle. And he went around the room and he found the bottle like with the ash. So this is like a tantric trick, how to, it is some power, yeah. But how to from the ash transmit and put it out through the hand. Yeah. And Atmadatta also knew these things because he was in this.
He was into tantra himself.
Yeah. So he's completely full of it.
Did everybody get that? He challenged him, where is your bottle full of ash? Because I know you have the stock somewhere, and that's how you can, you know. And they saw, they filmed him one time. He had stuff hidden in his seat and up his sleeve, and then he was popping them out and pulling them out. And they would go, oh,
there is
rascal.
There is a good internet page called Fake Baba.
Yes, and there's all kinds of stories about him. How some young boys that had originally gone there thinking he was God, and then later on they discovered he was doing all kinds of nonsense, so they were going to expose him. So four of them, they were all killed. They were murdered. And then the police covered the whole thing up. There's a whole thing on the internet about that. But anyway, we don't want to distract our time too much. I'm just giving that as an example of a cheating guru. Prabhupada says they mislead their followers, and this is how they do that. Yeah, that we're all God, man is in God, God is in man, you know. You dive deeply and then you enter into my existence, I'm an avatar, you know. Then you become God also, but right now you've forgotten that you're God. All nonsense, word juggle.
My question is, was that letter sent to him?
Yes. We never got a reply.
But this letter exists somewhere to see what was the, how it was written?
I don't know, actually, whether it might be in the archives or not. Presumably wrote it, and then he read it back to Prabhupada, and then it was sent off. I don't know whether it's in the archives or not. All right. All right, so let's go on. Mantra 13. Anyadibahu sambhavat, anyadahura sambhavat, iti sushruvadiranam, yenastadvichatakshire. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. So again, this is more or less a repetition of the previous verse, that you get different results by worshipping different objects. Not that yatapat tatapat, yeah, that everything, whatever you do, it all leads to the same goal. Very clearly says here that you get a different result. Anya, different. So, unless one hears from a bona fide acharya who is never disturbed by the changes of the material world, one cannot have the real key to transcendental knowledge. You have to go to somebody who is dhira, undisturbed, undisturbed authorities, dhiranam. So that means that he's free from the actions of the minds of material nature. Unless you're free from material nature, you can't be undisturbed. Yeah. So Prabhupada mentions there, Bhagavad Gita 9.25, those who worship the forefathers go there, those who worship the demigods go there, etc., etc., and those who worship Krishna go to Krishna. Here also in the Upanishad, it is verified that one achieves different results by different modes of worship. If we wish to remain on this wretched planet, Prabhupada's so cutting, this wretched planet, with our planning commissions and our stopgap political adjustments, we can certainly do that also. If you like to stay here, then stay. Nowhere in the authentic scriptures is it said that one will ultimately reach the same goal by doing anything or worshipping anyone. Such foolish theories are offered by self-made spiritual masters who have no connection with the parampara, the bona fide system of disciplic succession. Any common man can very easily understand that a person can reach his destination only when he has purchased a ticket for that destination. A person who purchases a ticket for Calcutta can reach Calcutta, but not Bombay. That's a common example Prabhupada used. But so-called spiritual masters say that any and all paths will take one to a supreme goal. So unless one has received knowledge from the bona fide spiritual master who is in the recognized line of disciplic succession, one cannot have the real thing as it is. You get something else. So again, lots of emphasis on those two sources. Krishna is the source, and that is presented, what he says, through the disciplic succession. And unless you have those two things, then you can't understand anything. In other words, only the Lord's devotee and a friend can understand the Gita. This also means that only one who follows the path of Arjuna can understand the Bhagavad Gita. So, he always emphasized that. Follow the path of Arjuna. Accept Krishna in the way that Arjuna accepted Krishna. Then you won't go wrong. So such interpreters can explain the verses of the Gita in their own way and postulate all sorts of rubbish in the name of the Gita. Such interpreters believe neither in Sri Krishna nor his eternal abode. How then can they explain the Bhagavad Gita? And actually, I missed a little anecdote from the visit to Sabergram and Warta when we were talking yesterday. On the first evening, Prabhupada was invited to go and visit Sabergram, which was and the Gandhi Ashram, which is in Sabergram. So we went round and they took us around, and it's all, you know, like bamboo and thatched cottages and mud walls, you know, mud huts. Very simple. That was his whole thing. No electricity. Keep everything very simple. We looked around, and then just on dusk, then they put some, there's some area out in the front, and they put some seats down, and then they put Gandhi's seat at the front. They all sit down and face it, and then they very slowly chanted some mantras from the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada sat down, you know, just observed. He didn't say very much for, you know, the whole visit. He was hardly saying anything. He was just looking. And then at the end of it, when we were due to leave, then they came up with the visitor's book, and they asked Prabhupada to sign it. And it's still there, actually. They still have it. I went and saw it. And so Prabhupada wrote in the book, he said, "Today I have visited the Gandhi Ashram at Sabergram." He said, it is so peaceful. I have asked them to chant Hare Krishna. The Prabhupada is actually like a double thing. It is so peaceful, it sounds like it's praise. But for a devotee, it's like death. I have asked them to chant Hare Krishna. Means wake up, you know, worship Krishna. So they claim to be followers of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, they chant the Bhagavad Gita slokas. But that's not actually their goal, Krishna. And he did remark, he said, "You'll see, not one deity of Krishna in the whole place, not even a picture of Krishna in the whole place." And Gandhi, Prabhupada said, had once commented that if Krishna was ever a person, then I'll give up my position as a Hindu. So-called guru, so-called Mahatma, another so-called spiritual leader, but leading everybody actually into darkness. And when we went to the car to leave the Gandhi Ashram, I opened the door for Prabhupada to get in, and, you know, he was standing like this, and so he kind of backed into the car, and as he sat down, then he said out loud to nobody in particular, "Nirvisesha Shunyavadi." And he sat in the car, I laughed, and then we drove off. So that was Prabhupada's mood. Although they're making this show of chanting Bhagavad Gita, but all Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, useless. And he commented, actually, that the only people that were there were old people that were old enough to remember Gandhi and respect him, and then very small kids, but no young people. He said, therefore, they'll all be, his movement is a failure. Nobody follows Gandhi, even the ones who say, you know, they worship Gandhi, but they don't follow him. Yeah. They're all into, you know, industrialization. His first follower was Nehru, right? He was his, you know, the guy that he trained up. The first thing that Nehru did was introduce industrialization. He said, everything Indian is bad, we have to follow the West. This was the first thing that he did. All Gandhi's efforts were a complete, total failure. But everybody's got this sentiment on Mahatma. Such interpreters explain the verses of the Bhagavad Gita in their own way. Again, Gandhi. You know, what did Gandhi say? Very first verse.
It's about Gandhi, but it's a different point.
Alright.
We have Gandhi in our Bhagavad Gita in the back.
Yeah.
Anybody understand? So in one sense, I mean, there's one purport, it appears that Gandhi is a demon. It's very clear. So on the other hand, we have in the back of the Bhagavad Gita a wonderful statement by Gandhi. So do we tell the truth to people? I mean, there was just a contradiction in us. Because,
well, yeah, Prabhupada doesn't name Gandhi specifically in his commentaries in the Gita. Just like here, he's not specifically saying Vivekananda is a rascal, so-called guru. But he's talking about those people. And he actually is thinking about who they are in his descriptions, but he doesn't name them. But he just describes the characteristics. So the innocent reader, he'll not get, you know, oh, why is he criticizing this one and that one? But he'll see, oh yeah, this is a fact. You know, interpretations and stuff, they're all useless. So we use them to whatever extent we can. Yeah. Gandhi said something nice about the Gita, so we put it in. There's so many other things that he said that are nonsense. We don't put those in.
It's like quoting Trinity.
Yeah, you know. You take dirt from a, take gold from a dirty place.
There was one place where Prabhupada said he wasn't a Christian.
Yes, a covered personalist. Prabhupada once described him as a covered personalist. But actually, I mean, you know, what I was going to say here is that what is that interpretation of Gandhi's, of the Gita?
What is it that he thinks that the Kshetra is the Achilles or compared to the body? So it's
like
an
analogy.
You can
see
it in that way. It was never real.
Yes.
Never existed.
Yes, all allegorical. The Pandavas are the five senses. You know, Kurukshetra is the body, blah, blah, blah. All mental speculation. Yeah. All, and his conclusion is that Krishna never existed as a person. So, such interpreters believe neither in Sri Krishna nor his eternal abode. How then can they explain the Bhagavad Gita? Prabhupada specifically talking about Gandhi here. This is his rascaldom. I actually read Gandhi's autobiography, and he said very clearly there, he said, I have no faith in these so-called holy places. I have never been to a holy place. He was proud of the fact that he never went to any holy places. These are the manifestations of the Lord's, you know, eternal abode on this planet, but he was very proud of never having gone to any. Because he had no faith in them. He thought it was all useless superstition to visit Vrindavan, to visit Rishikesh or so many other places. So he never went there. Bogus. So only those who are cleansed of all sinful reactions can have such unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord. That's another important point, that one has to not only hear but behave. We've talked about this a little bit before. Two things are required. You have to hear from the right source, and you also have to have the right actions. Those actions will purify you from material contact. Yeshan Twananta Gitam Papam. When you are freed from all the reactions to previous sinful activities, then you can actually dedicate yourself to the service of the Lord with determination. So the same thing that Prabhupada is saying here. Those who are cleansed of all sinful reactions. Therefore, the guru's business, as he said there, that bogus gurus who act immorally but claim to be giving knowledge. No, a guru is never immoral, and nor does he allow his disciples to be immoral, but he trains them. Therefore Prabhupada said, four regulative principles and chant Hare Krishna, this will purify your existence. No other gurus were doing this. Oh yeah, it's alright, do whatever you like, drink, smoke, eat meat, blah blah blah, you know, and at the same, have sex, you know, as much as you like. And at the same time, meditate 15 minutes a day. And this is so-called transcendental meditation. All bogus. No purification, and therefore no realization either. The words Sarvasya Prabhava indicate that Krishna is the creator of everyone, including Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And because these three principal deities of the material world are created by the Lord is the creator of all that exists in the material and spiritual worlds. This is a direct statement of Bhagavad Gita. Aham Adiya Devanam. I am the source of all the devas. Means Brahma, Shiva, everybody. He's the source. Then Krishna is clearly beyond the material world. Yes, Guru.
Just what to say about this Maharishi, actually. There's many, many devotees joining from this group. It's interesting enough when somebody comes up to him and asks more and more, what is above all this, you know, field or because he talks about eternal unifying field. Said, so you go to Hare Krishna, you are now, I cannot give you more. Interestingly enough, he's sending people to ISKCON.
Yeah, because he knows he's a cheater.
Yeah, that gives him pleasure.
So one devotee actually, they went to him, they've been going to different yogis, and somebody in early, mid-70s, they went to him and they, you know, after some time, then he asked him, well, what about God? You know, what about, because he wasn't saying anything, just chant these mantras, do them, or anything, you know. But this boy was actually after God. So he went to him, he said, you know, tell me about God. He said, no, if you want to know about God, you have to go to Bhaktivedanta Swami. Yes, bro.
Behind the book properly, Srila Prabhupada never criticized in his book directly or using some name like Vivekananda and talking Rasa. So that was his mood. But after he left the planet, his letters and comment and discussion were used to making Srila Prabhupada books, like Life Came From Life. Was that like which Prabhupada would like to see? You know what I think? To use his words about this is Rasa, this is nonsense,
yeah,
to be presented like his official book should be distributed?
Well, I once asked Srila Prabhupada in Bombay about this similar kind of principle. Because Prabhupada was starting to talk openly on morning walks, darshans, about Gandhi, about how he's, you know, misinterpreted everything and spoiled everything. And Prabhupada was well known for criticizing, you know, Vivekananda and all these people. There is a conversation from Washington, D.C. in 76 when this man... he was a professor, Indian professor. His name just slipped my brain. Anyway, he came and he, you know... Immediately they started talking about Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, and he knew Prabhupada was, you know, completely against them. He was laughing. So everybody, you know, knew that Prabhupada was very critical. You know, it wasn't so disguised, but in his books he didn't name them. Because you don't give advertisement to a rascal, basically. Why give them some free publicity? Yeah. Criticize their philosophy, their behavior, that's fine. But don't give their name, otherwise then somebody will think, oh. It's just like, in another sense, I met this boy in Poland 2 years ago. And I was staying at his house, we were doing some program. And he had previously been with Siddhasrupa and Anders group. They were the first group to split away from ISKCON. Yes. And they're big in Poland, they have 7 or 8 centers. And, you know, his whole thing is anti-ISKCON. Always criticizing ISKCON. Can't stop. Right? So this boy had been with them for about a year. And he heard so much, don't go to ISKCON. Don't read ISKCON books. Don't do ISKCON this, ISKCON that. So he started to think, well, what is it with ISKCON? So he came to an ISKCON center. And then when he heard everything, he thought, well, you know, he saw they're all bogus. So he joined us instead. So if you give too much publicity to your adversaries, then they get the benefit from that. So don't name them. But sometimes, I mean, like I'm writing my books, I put this in. But then, you know, Prabhupada did in public and private sometimes criticize them by name. And I put that in my books because my books are meant for the devotees. They're not, you know, for general distribution. And the devotees should know what Prabhupada actually thought about these people. So I did ask Prabhupada in Bombay that, you know, sometimes you speak very strongly about Gandhi and things like this. These men are, you know, they were a little shocked, you know, to hear Prabhupada criticizing like that. And then Prabhupada said, previously he said we did not speak, but he said as we get more strength, he said, then we will speak. So, you know, Prabhupada didn't used to say much when he was not known. But his movement got bigger and bigger and he got more influence and he was starting to become more and more pointed in his comments. Yeah.
in Vancouver, when you came, you read from Prabhupada's diary. And Mr.
My diary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, from your diary.
Yes.
I'm sorry, diary. From your diary. And then Mr. Ram Agarwal, an Indian man,
yeah.
Him and his wife stood up and then yes. they were blocking their ears and they actually left the temple. And then I was doing a book table there and then actually it was pretty intense.
Yeah, he tried to bail me up in the front entrance afterwards.
Yeah.
He didn't leave immediately, he stayed. But I just told him, because he challenged me, who are you to criticize Gandhi? In other words, you're not an Indian, how can you talk about Gandhi?
Yeah.
I just said, I'm not saying. I said, this is Prabhupada's words. I said, Prabhupada is also an Indian. I challenged him. I said, Prabhupada is also an Indian, why he cannot criticize Gandhi? I said, not everybody in India thinks that Gandhi was a saintly person. Otherwise, why did they shoot him?
And you said something also. You said if you come to the temple, then you should know what we should not hide to you. We should tell you what Prabhupada think about these people.
Yeah.
You should know.
Yes.
And even up to this day, this man is faithful to Islam.
Yes. Because I talked with him afterwards, and I actually exposed, you know, Gandhi's philosophy. I said, you know, Prabhupada didn't think he was a bad person, but he was misled, and he was misleading others because of his misinterpretation. So, and I challenged him. I said, Gandhi says that the Pandavas are the five senses, and I said, do you really believe that? I said, Prabhupada's very clear. I said, now you make your choice. Do you want to follow Prabhupada or do you want to follow Gandhi? I said, Gandhi may have been, you know, a big politician, but the real Mahatma is Srila Prabhupada. Now you choose. I had it out with him. And as you say, he's still coming. All right, let's go on, otherwise we won't get finished. He who existed before the creation of Brahma and who enlightened Brahma with Vedic knowledge is Lord Sri Krishna. Now Prabhupada starts giving some other Shastric quotes here to back up his, you know, assertions in the purports. Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Narayan Upanishad, the Supreme Person Narayan, desired to create all living beings. So Prabhupada's making the point that this is reinforced, what he's saying. It's not some bogus thing that he's presenting, but all the Shastras, they also say. The Maha Upanishad, there's another quote there, only Narayan existed in the beginning. Krishna himself says in the Moksha Dharma. Then there's the Varaha Purana. Then there's the Brahma Samhita. So the conviction that Krishna is all in all is established when one hears the transcendental message from the undisturbed Acharya with faith and love. Dhiranam, from the Dhiranam, not from those who are disturbed by the modes of material nature. One who is disturbed by the whirlpool of material energy is not qualified to become an Acharya. Very clear about that. So, and then he talks about Arjuna fighting for Krishna on the Battle of Kurukshetra. Such accomplishments are possible only when one worships the real Krishna and not some fabricated Krishna invented by foolish men who are without knowledge of the intricacies of the science of Krishna described in the Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, here's an example of a fabricated Krishna, Sai Baba. We'll have a little bit more about that. Prajumya Prabhu had a lengthy meeting with Prabhupada this afternoon. This was some days after the meeting with Dr. Kapoor. So, to finalize his reply to the Blitz article on Sai Baba, Prajumya read from the opening paragraph of the article, which was entitled, God is an Indian. This was the title of the article in the newspaper. His contemporary avatar rests in the trinity of Sirti Baba, Sai Baba, and then Prem Baba to come. So, Sachi Sai Baba, the second of the triple incarnation, asserted in the course of a marathon interview to add, in my present avatar, I have come armed with the fullness of the power of the formless God to save humanity. He's making this declaration. Such a rascal.
Srila Prabhupada dictated the outline of the letter to Pradyumna. Dear Sai Baba, just recently in the Blitz paper published on such and such a date, we were surprised to find one article, God is an Indian, and you have claimed to become an incarnation of God to save the human society. What is the ground for your claiming as incarnation? And what you have done to save human society? Will you explain for the enlightenment of us, or many of us? We have got the list of incarnations recorded in Vedic scripture and their respective activities also. So where is that record in Vedic scripture about your appearing as incarnation? Lord Krishna's incarnationness is fully described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Similarly, Lord Ramachandra's incarnationness, or Lord Buddha's incarnationness, Lord Chaitanya's incarnationness. We have got full information in Vedic scripture. So where is your incarnation described? Will you kindly give the reference? Anyone can say like you that one is an incarnation, as it has become a fashion nowadays. But is that claim the only proof of one's becoming an incarnation? Such unauthorized claim of becoming an incarnation is certainly ridiculous. Then you have claimed to take form. What has he written? Pradyumna reread Baba's claim to being an avatar armed with the fullness of the power of the formless God. Completely jugglery. Prabhupada continued, so you have claimed to take a form of the formless God, but we see in the Bhagavad Gita that God is never formless. He had Pradyumna read out verse 724 from the Gita and its purport, telling Pradyumna to quote the verse in the letter, along with a quote from Yamunacharya found in the purport. Prabhupada went on with his dictation. Only the rascals and less intelligent class of men think that God is formless, and when he incarnates, then he takes a particular form. So in this connection, the statement of the Bhagavatam is especially important. Brahmati Paramatmati Bhagavan iti Sabhyate. Brahman is impersonal, Paramatma is localized, and Bhagavan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Voicing aloud Prabhupada's statement as he wrote it down, Pradyumna repeated, Brahman is the impersonal. Prabhupada immediately corrected him. Brahman is impersonal, not Paramatma is localized and Bhagavan... Brahman is impersonal, not Brahman is the impersonal. The Prabhupada picked it up, just one important word there, the. Brahman is impersonal, not the. And Paramatma is localized, and Bhagavan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Citing many verses from Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada made the point that Krishna's personality cannot be understood without his mercy. And again quoting from the Gita, Prabhupada came to a very pointed conclusion. So Krishna, as a person, says to Arjuna that both of them existed in the past as person, they'll continue to remain person in the future. So without knowing all this knowledge, a mudhara accepts the incarnation of God as coming from imperson. Avajanati mam mudhara manasim tanam ashritam. Under this heading, you have proved yourself to become a mudhara. And how a mudhara or an ass can become the incarnation of God. So that was Prabhupada's letter to Sai Baba. Not content with that, Prabhupada asked Pradyumna to read the rest of the article to him. Pradyumna squinted through his glasses at the paper and read out a declaration by the writer of his acceptance of what he called the avatar concept, which broadly means the descent of the divine principle into human affairs. Reminding the reader of Lord Krishna's descent to save humanity, the writer declared, solution and cure to world's ills. To Baba's devotees, the avatar has similarly come to provide both the solution and the cure to a world living in terror of a nuclear holocaust. The false dichotomies created by Western thought between God and man, Purusha and Deva, simply do not exist in Indian scriptures, which prescribe the assimilation of God in man and man in God as the basis of religion. So he's even quoting Indian scripture. so-called Indian scriptures. Prabhupada was disgusted. This is another rascaldom. God is always distinct from man. Pradyumna said that Sai Baba made a similar quote himself later in the piece, and he read it out. God is man, and man is God. All of us have something of God, the divine spark within us. All men are divine, like myself, with the spirit embodied in human flesh and bone. The only difference is that they are unaware of this godhood. So I quoted that earlier. Skipping to another section of the article, Pradyumna went on. Here he says, the mission of the present avatar is to make everybody realize that since the same God or divinity resides in everyone, people should respect, love, and, he was going to say, you know, worship each other. Prabhupada cut in. No, no, if he resides in everyone, then why has he special claim? In other words, if God is everybody, then why are you claiming you're taking some special... Yeah. Yes, well, he says he has remembered. He remembers, Prabhupada said. Then how can God forget? Well, then he says here, he says that, take paddy or rice by way of an illustration. Every grain of rice is enclosed in a husk. You have to remove the husk to get the grain of rice. Now, the husk and the rice both come from the same seed. So rice is the equivalent of God in man. But still, husk is not rice, Prabhupada said. You cannot say husk is rice. Nodding in agreement, Pradyumna went on. He says, rice is the equivalent of man in, God in man, while the husk can be compared to desire, which reduces God to man. Prabhupada sat shaking his head. No, no. Pradyumna finished the quote. Therefore, life plus desire equals man. Life minus desire equals God. Prabhupada dictated the concluding words of his letter. You are desiring to become God. There cannot be no desire. So he's got it. He's saying no desire, but you're desiring to be God. But you are unceremoniously desiring to become God, although there is no proof in the Shastras. In Bhagavad Gita it is accepted the living entities are sparks, part and parcel of God, Krishna. But the part is never equal to the whole. So you can claim as a spark of God, as every living entity can claim, but you cannot claim as the Supreme Person with full power. That is misleading. You can show a little magic, as other magicians can also show, but you cannot show the full magic as Krishna displayed or Lord Ram displayed. Therefore, your claim as a full power is completely false and blasphemous. Pradyumna stopped writing and looked up, raising a point of his own. Well, now someone may bring up the point. They say, well, if an avatar comes, he must show all kinds of great opulences and powers. Then he says, sometimes the incarnation shows this, but sometimes, like when Lord Chaitanya appeared, he didn't show the Vishvarupa. So Prabhupada replied, but he never claimed that I am an avatar. Yeah, you can't use the argument, well, Lord Chaitanya, you say he's God, but he never showed the fullness of God. The Prabhupada said no, but he never claimed that he's an avatar either. But we understand from Shastric evidence, he never claimed. Rather, when he was addressed as Krishna, he blocked his ears. You don't say like that. He never claimed. He fully displayed himself as a devotee, not Bhagavan. Therefore, this Gaurangavad is illegal. Gauranga Nagari, that is illegal. So that's the opposite. Sai Baba is saying, yes, I am God. I am an avatar. Yeah? I am the formless God come to you in the form of a person to save you all. But Lord Chaitanya, who was actually God, he came, he said, no, no, don't call me God. I'm not God. This is the difference. So, and the last point Prabhupada made there. Familiar with the Apasampradaya that Prabhupada was referring to, Pradyumna said, oh, Gauranga Nagari, they're mentioning Lord Chaitanya in the role of Krishna dancing with the gopis. So Prabhupada nodded, yes, in this way you find out the faulty statements and give him proof. So leaving Prabhupada to chant quietly in the garden, Pradyumna typed the letter and it was sent off to Sacha Sai Baba. Then a few days later, Prabhupada was giving a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he brought this same topic up. Prabhupada has a cold as well as other ailments, but it did not deter him from giving his Bhagavatam class. In the verse, Arjuna glorifies Krishna as an avatar, and without mentioning any names, Prabhupada's comments had us smiling, especially in view of his recent letter to the so-called Sai Baba avatar. Here it is said, Tatayam cha avataras te bhuvo para jihirshaya. Avatar does not mean a big beard or big hair, because that's Sai Baba, right? It's like an afro. We do not like to see such ugly avatar. We kick on their face, this avatar. This is not avatar. Avatar must be mentioned in Shastra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was talking with Sanatan Goswami, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described about avatar. So just to make a little joke, because they are personal devotees, so he knew that Lord Chaitanya is the avatar, so still he inquired from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how shall we know one avatar? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, why? It is all mentioned in the Shastra. So avatar should be understood from Shastra, not by jugglery or magic. This is rascal. As soon as one wants to establish his avatarship by jugglery and magic, kick him out. Immediately, on the face, directly, kick him. Let the avatar take steps. I don't mind. Kick him on the face and then let's see what you can do if you're an amateur. You stop us. Prabhupada, very direct, heavy. Alright, we'll whiz through this bit. Vedanta Sutra, Sambhuta is the source of birth and sustenance as well as the reservoir that remains after annihilation. So the source of all the emanations is not a dead stone but is abhigya, or fully conscious. If there's consciousness here, there must be consciousness in the Absolute. Certainly half-educated spiritual leaders who are disturbed by the tides of material existence cannot know him fully. They try to make some compromise by making the mass of humanity the object of worship, but they do not know that such worship is only a myth because the masses are imperfect. It's exactly Sai Baba's statement. Same old Mayavadi nonsense. Ishapanishad advises us to pour water on the root, the source of all germination. Worship of the mass of humanity by rendering bodily service, which can never be perfect, is less important than service to the soul. The soul is the root that generates the different types of body according to the law of karma. Again, Sai Baba, same thing. He has a huge operation. Millions of dollars they spend one on hospitals, poor feeding, clothing, this same old stuff. If he's an avatar, then why is he not helping the soul? He's just doing all this bodily stuff. Therefore Prabhupada says, half-educated spiritual leaders. All they can do is mislead. And at the same time, cutting the throats of poor animals in slaughterhouses is no service at all to the soul, the living being. So you claim to be serving everybody, but if everything is God, then why you slit the throat of the chickens? Yeah, Morgi mission. Vivekananda? Outside Barbara, I don't know, but the Ramakrishna mission, Prabhupada's referring. Now I'll eat meat and so many things. But if actually everything is God, then why are you slitting their throats? And one God you're feeding and clothing, and another God you're slitting his throat and eating. All nonsense. The Lord comes personally to teach this philosophy of surrender to the Supreme, the Sambhuta, the real Supreme. And the real service to humanity is rendered when one teaches surrender to and worship of the Supreme Lord with full love and energy. That is the instruction of the Ishapanishad and this mantra. The simple way to worship the Supreme Lord in this age of disturbance is to hear and chant about his great activities. So in modern times, the number of such pretenders has increased considerably and has become a problem for the pure devotees of the Lord to save the masses of people from the unholy propaganda of these pretenders and pseudo-incarnations. Now, there is a section here that I put in about a meeting that Prabhupada had with, what was his name? Dr. Shukla, Shalagram Shukla, that was it. But I'm not going to read it out now because we're running out of time. I may come back to this in a minute, but I want to finish the salient points on the last sloka. The Upanishads indirectly draw our attention to the primeval Lord, Sri Krishna, but the Bhagavad Gita, which is a summary of all the Upanishads, directly points to Sri Krishna. And the Bhagavatam says, by hearing of the activities of the Lord, the devotee draws the attention of the Lord. Thus the Lord, being situated in the heart of every living being, helps the devotee by giving him proper directions. So you don't have to speculate. You just chant the glories of Krishna, worship Krishna nicely, and he gives all the information that one needs to get out of this material world. Half-educated spiritualists cannot free us from material existence. Only Krishna can do that. So the guru who directs us to worship Krishna, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakta, Majajin Mandanas Guru, he actually can free us from this material world because he instructs us, what? To worship the Lord with love and affection, and then the Lord being within our hearts enlightens us. That is, it's like a triangle. Yeah, it's complete, like a circle. The guru is there, Krishna is there, the living entity is there, and then with the right knowledge and process, then that relationship grows between all three. The Lord's inner direction cleanses the devotee's heart of all contamination produced by the modes of passion and ignorance. When one attains brahmanical qualification, he becomes happy and enthusiastic to render devotional service to the Lord. Automatically, the science of God is unveiled before him. You don't have to be, you know, a genius, but you just have to know enough to surrender to Krishna. Any low-born person, they can do that. And automatically, the science of God is unveiled before him if he approaches in the right way. It's personal. Not that you have to splice and dice and know Sanskrit and, you know, speculate on this word and that word and, you know, suffixes and prefixes and all this stuff. Just please Krishna, he's the source of everything, and immediately all your problems are solved. Okay, so that's mantra 13. Any comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu.
The question to this Gauranga Bhad, which is mentioned there. And as far as I know, like Lord Nityananda, for example, when he went to Bengal to preach, he always preached like chant Gauranga, actually, and be happy.
No, that's chant Gauranga means in understanding that Lord Chaitanya is a devotee. He never worshipped him as the Supreme. They knew he was God, but they never worshipped him as the Supreme Lord. The Gaurangavadis, the Gauranga Nagaris, they worship Lord Gauranga in the residence. So they actually, you know, they worship him as Krishna, and, you know, his activities in the residence and all these different things. Then they put that onto Lord Gauranga. But you can't do that. Then that's apasampradaya. You disturb the mood of the Lord by doing so. Lord Chaitanya never had a residence. He was a sannyasi. But then they say, no, he's Krishna, so then now Lord Chaitanya can have the residence because he's actually Krishna, and then worship him as Krishna having the residence. So that's mixing of the two leelas.
But I read it in some books that in the Srivastava there was Radha than Sapani.
That just corresponds to the place.
It doesn't mean that Lord Chaitanya was engaged in the residence.
There, Sankirtan is the equivalent.
Yeah. This Gaudadesh is the same as Vrindavan. It's the same place, but it's these pastimes of Krishna are hidden here. Here the mood is worshipping of Krishna through the process that Lord Chaitanya gave. And we worship Lord Chaitanya, you know. Yes, we say that he's God, but we worship him as the supreme devotee. We don't worship him as, you know, the convener of the residence. There's no such pastimes of Lord Chaitanya that he's having a residence. So therefore we, you know, although we have Radha Krishna and we have the gopis, but we don't have Lord Chaitanya with the gopis. No, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there with the Panchatattva. It's a different mood, different worship. And although all the this is the identical place as Vrindavan, but the activities that are manifest here are different than they are in Vrindavan. But there's a Radhakund, there's Govardhan, you know, there's so many different places. And if you have this spiritual insight, you can see those places. Just like at the Chaitanya Mat, they have Radhakund and like that. That was established by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. But the worship of Lord Gauranga is very specific. You can't mix that with the worship of Radha and Krishna. Then it becomes an offense. So there's many aprasampradayas, and they all have their own concocted types of worship. So we have to hear from the acharya, bona fide acharyas, which is the right way, otherwise we'll get misled. Then he won't please Lord Chaitanya, he'll actually displease him. Any other questions?
Regarding the demigods topic, we understand that Shiva is in fact the devotee of Krishna and his life. But Prabhupada never installed any Shiva linga or something like that. But they became practice now after Prabhupada left the world, that in some places they install Shiva linga as protector of the dam.
In our temples?
In Hungry Farm, for example. Is that maybe like an idea which they had of Rupa Sanatana Goswami to establish like kundas where they are living to remember the past and preparation?
That you can do.
In that sense, like Bhaktisiddhanta also did. You know?
Yeah, that you can do. But, I'm just trying to remember if there was any occasion when Prabhupada said that demigods could be put in our temples. I'd have to check on this, but there was some question of whether they were going to do something like that in Sri Lanka, because they all worship Buddha, and Buddha's an incarnation, it's mentioned in the, you know, Bhagavatam. So I think they had an idea to have a deity of Lord Buddha, but at the side, with, you know, the verse from the Bhagavatam glorifying him, so that people know that it's an incarnation of Krishna. And similarly, you know, if you have Ganesh or Lord Shiva or whatever, but then the verse from the Brahma Samhita that describes how they are, you know, manifestations of Govinda, or they're subordinate to Govinda. That may be done, as long as it's very clear that they are demigods. New Vrindavan?
I mean, I'm just asking.
I don't know what they've done there. I have no idea.
Because they also have idea, like this is different, different forest, like in Vrindavan. Then you go from one temple to another.
Yeah, that you can do. It's you know, to create an atmosphere. That you can do. But we don't, you know, specifically, we don't worship demigods. There is a system. You can recognize the demigods as being servants of Krishna, and then that's not so bad, because sometimes people have respect, you know, for Shiva or whatever.
Like Kshetra part in that sense.
Yeah, then it may not be so bad. I want to read up some more on this and see what Prabhupada had to say about demigods in our temples.
I mean, it was anyway outside of the temple, it's like on the fields. Like
yeah. You have a question?
Well, I just want to mention that in Bangladesh, they have this Shiva temple and constructed a big Krishna temple, and they call it the same. Is it Bangladesh?
Where? I've never been to Bangladesh.
No, somebody gave four temples in Malaysia in Dhaka, which was Shiva temple, like in Nayan Maharishi, called this temple.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd want to check and see if Prabhupada ever said anything about that.
Regarding the Bangladesh, actually, the land donated to ISKCON, and originally the Shiva temple was there, actually.
It was already there. Yeah.
So the
that's a different thing.
Krishna temple, and they do RRT for what Krishna calls them, the Krishna they go and show it to Lord Shiva.
Then that's.
Baroda is the same thing. Baroda Puja is the same thing. In Baroda Puja, the same thing. I was donated to Shiva temple.
Acha. Yeah, so if it's already there, then you're not going to disrespect Lord Shiva. All right, let's whiz through the last mantra. One question.
Yeah, I'm just so confused about what you're saying. My understanding is, you know, like the puja, the consciousness, we do put it in a peacock feather, what you're saying. And then some people
bringing up the peacock controversy.
Well, I really don't know.
We put the peacock feather on Lord Chaitanya because Prabhupada said it was all right.
Okay, and also
yes, that's the quick answer.
What about the following of the fallacy? Does Lord Chaitanya follow the fallacy when we offer the food?
As far as I know, yeah. In Vrindavan, when we were doing the offering plates, Nitai Gaur, they get Ekadasi Prasadam on Ekadasi. And of course Krishna and Balaram and Radhishan, they don't. So as far as I know, they're still doing that. They were doing it, you know, when I was there with Prabhupada.
It's because many temples now, they do offer on the kind of sea some grace for the time when you can have going to
that. Well, you'll have to take that up with the deity minister. But as far as I'm aware, they should be getting the Ekadasi Prasadam.
And we do put peacock feather on the...
Yes, Prabhupada said it was all right. Put
Lord Chaitanya or Nityananda in Chaitanya?
That I'm not sure. Lord Chaitanya, definitely. But again, I'm not cluey on the details of that one. I know this was debated for years. Huh? This was a subject that has been debated for years.
I would love it.
And there are some statements by Srila Prabhupada on that. But it's clear that Prabhupada didn't have any problems with putting a peacock feather on Lord Chaitanya. Okay?
Sorry.
No, it's alright. It's good to bring these things up. Okay, let's do this last verse, mantra 14. We'll chant this. Sambhutim cha vinasham cha yasad vedo vayam saha vinashena nirchum tirva sambhutyam ritam ashrute. And I've highlighted there on the translation, one should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation and its temporary demigods, men and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it. And in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. So, again, Prabhupada has taken the liberty to put in the translation, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. It's specifically known in it. But you won't see Krishna's name there in the original mantra. But as he's established in his commentaries on the previous verses, these verses can only indicate the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not anyone else, and so he's just being very upfront in stating it very clearly so that we don't get bewildered. So, whenever an intelligent man raises the question of these miseries of material life before a so-called scientist, the scientist very cleverly replies that material science is progressing and that ultimately it will be possible to render man deathless, ageless, and diseaseless. Such answers prove the scientist's gross ignorance of material nature. Bluff. All bluff. Only by this process, given by the Upanishad, can you actually come to the deathless state. The scientist makes so many promises, but actually material nature, there's no question. As long as you're in the material world, you're going to die. You're going to get disease. You're going to get old age. And you're going to have to get rebirth. And nobody can change that. The only process for getting free of that is to follow the Ishapanishad. So, therefore, the entire material universe is called Martya Loka, the place of death. Material scientists and politicians are trying to make this place deathless because they have no information of the deathless spiritual nature. They're trying to make this place deathless because they don't know that there is actually another place which is deathless, which is the spiritual nature. So they want to be deathless. Prabhupada said that in a previous purport. Nobody wants to die. Everybody wants to live forever. But you actually have to know the nature of this material world and the spiritual world to know how to become deathless. So what we want is to be happy eternally. And the Vedic literature is aimed at giving us that. But if you speculate, concoct, then you'll stay in this material world and now you'll not get the goal, which is to become free from birth and death and enjoy in the spiritual world. Material scientists and politicians trying to make this place deathless. Sorry, we just read that. So then he quotes from Vishnu Purana, another quote from another Purana. Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, possesses different energies known as para and apara, superior and inferior. So, Bhagavad Gita again, similar quote, paras tasmat tu bhavanya. Description of a place beyond this material world, which is again deathless and always manifest. And then Prabhupada gives some sense of this planetary systems. He's talking that even after at the end of one day of Brahma, everything is destroyed and then again recreated the next day. One of our years is equal to only 24 hours or one day and night on many of the upper planetary systems. The four ages of Earth, Satya, Treta, Dwarpa and Kali, how long are they? One cycle of yugas, how long does it last? Yes, 4,320,000,000, right?
Four million three hundred and twenty thousand years is one cycle
of yugas, and the four ages of Earth then, that is only 12,000 years according to the time scale on the upper planetary system. And then Brahma, he has 30 days in a month, 12 months in a year, 100 years he lives, and then such nights, days and nights accumulate months and years. Brahma lives for 100 years. Then at the end of Brahma's life, the complete universal manifestation is vanquished. So Prabhupada's making a point here that you can't escape from this process of repeated manifestation and destruction as long as you're in this material universe. During the night of Brahma, there is a devastation. During this time, no living beings or species remain manifest, although spiritually they continue to exist. This manifested stage is called avyakta. Then, when the entire universe is vanquished at the end of Brahma's lifetime, there is another avyakta state. But beyond these two unmanifested states, that's at the end of the day, and at the end of the life, there is another unmanifested state, the spiritual atmosphere or nature. There are a great number of spiritual planets in this atmosphere, and these planets exist eternally. So, again, just trying to make the point that there is a deathless place, there is something beyond this material universe. But no matter where you go in this universe, you cannot escape from this business of devastation and non-manifestation. Only when you get out of the material universe. So, ekapad vibhuti, that is the inferior energy, and Tripad Vibhuti, that is the spiritual of Paraprakriti. And again, that's where Krishna resides, and he can be approached only by unalloyed devotional service, not by any other process. No one can enter into the spiritual Vaikuntha planets without being trained in devotional service. So we must try to enter the spiritual planets where we can live eternally in the association of Lord Krishna or his planetary expansions, his Narayan forms. And then again, Prabhupada gives the ultimate instruction, Savadama Parijagya Mamikam Sarnam Braja. So then again, he's criticizing those who have lack information or have misinterpreted this prime teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. They start varieties of public and semi-governmental institutions to tackle the devastating power of nature. But they do not know how to pacify insurmountable nature. So-called transcendentalists, what are they doing? Opening hospitals, feeding the poor, blah, 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 like this. And at the same time, talking about a jugglery of words, that I am the form of the formless, I am the avatar, you have to merge yourself in me, like this. And what is he doing? He's feeding the poor. Yeah? And in the meantime, the material nature is devastating power. And you're not doing anything to get out of it. It's insurmountable power. But you can if you surrender to Krishna. So they overlook the Gita's message by which material nature can be pacified. So he's described this universal scale. Lord Brahma, there's a devastation. Every living being disappears every night of Lord Brahma. And then at the end of the lifetime, again, they all disappear. But Prabhupada said this devastation of nature can be pacified by the power of devotional service. So Sambhuti, the personality of Godhead, and Vinasha, the temporary manifestation, they should be understood side by side. Know what the transcendental is, know what the material is, and make the distinction. So no one can be saved from these devastations by the opening of hospitals. Yeah. Prabhupada had this unique way of putting everything in perspective. Yeah, it describes, this amazing lifespans, of the demigods. One whole cycle of yugas here is only 12,000 years on their planets. And Lord Brahma, how long is he living? Billions, beyond our calculation, billions of years. So nobody can be safe from these devastations by opening hospitals. So these people claim that they're, transcendentalists. They claim that it's all one, that we're all God. Yeah. Well, if you're God, why are you bothering to open up a hospital? That's not the activity of God. Useless hospitals. People go and then they get some so-called cure or treatment and then die anyway. So what is the use of a hospital? It doesn't do any good for anybody. Temporarily, it might help you keep your body functioning. That's another thing. But as an actual spiritual activity, there's no value whatsoever. But still, we're big gurus. So we must therefore save ourselves and our fellow man in the right way. There is no question of liking or disliking the truth. It is there. Just accept it. That's all. Understand it and accept it. The truth is that if we want to be safe from repeated birth and death, we must take to the devotional service of the Lord. There can be no compromise, for this is a matter of necessity. There's no solutions to the problems of life except devotional service. That's what Prabhupada said there. Because only Krishna has the power to get us out of this material world. And the little firefly, so-called gurus, yogis, avatars, they'll all remain in the darkness of ignorance. Only the devotees will get out, because only Krishna can get them out, get anybody out, and he'll only get out those
the worship in favourable. So, any questions or comments? Yes, Paul.
It says that you have to perfectly know this material world and the spiritual world, Krishna, so on. How can we perfectly know everything with our tiny brain?
Yeah, by Krishna's grace. You can know it perfectly in the sense that you see its limitations and then you disassociate from it. It doesn't mean that you have to know, you know, how everything's going on Brahmaloka or Tapaloka or Patalaloka. That means you'd have to go there and see and study. We don't even know what's going on this planet. But you have to be able to see, in summary, that the material energy, our association with it, that is faulty. That's the problem. So you give it up. So that means you perfectly understood your relationship with the material energy. It means I'm separate from it. And how you disassociate yourself, you don't act in a material way anymore. So you give up your material desires by directing your propensity to desire towards Krishna. And you take shelter in Krishna. Then no more association with material nature. That means you perfectly understood, yeah, what the material nature is. And you have no more involvement. You have a question for me? Any other comments, questions?
Yeah, I had a question to get into this Gauranga topic. So, we put towards the garland on Lord Chaitanya. Is it okay also?
Yeah. He's still Vishnu Tattva. So Tulsi Devi doesn't mind, you know, hanging around the neck of Lord Chaitanya.
Also on
Advaita Charya,
also putting.
Yes, because he's also Vishnu Tattva. So that can be done. So, you know, it's a question of mood. And sometimes it's difficult to understand what the mood is. Therefore, we have to take it from the acharyas. Because the acharyas have done so, then, you know, we accept that. So the acharyas say, no, you can't worship Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Krishna with the gopis. But you can still recognize him as Vishnu Tattva by giving him the Tulsi garland. So, you know, those finer points of worship that you can only understand by the pure devotees and you know, their realizations. They get their instructions, you know, directly from the Lord himself. We're not on that platform. So if we can't understand these things, we must go to the acharyas to understand.
I understand that we are here worshipping like Gauranga Mahaprabhu in the mood of a servant. But how can we understand, like, the yoga people in the main altar, deity, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, personally installed, like, Gauranga with Vishnu Priya and Lakshmi Priya? How can we understand this? A child in our line worship Gauranga as the enjoyer, and not only as the son of both.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya had his associates. It's like the Panchatattva. We worship the Panchatattva. Why are we worshipping Sri Vasudeva? He's not, you know, Vishnu Tattva, but he's worshipped as the best of the devotees. So there are different moods, and you have to know what the moods of devotion are before you do your worship. So Lord Chaitanya, you know, he had his two consorts. But we don't worship them as, you know, like the same way that we worship Radha and Krishna. It's a different mood. So you have to know the mood, that's the whole point. Yeah? Otherwise it's rasa-basa. If you do rasa-basa, then, you know, you make offenses.
One of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada asked him, how do we worship Lord Dharma because he's a sannyasa?
Even if within Lord Chaitanya's appearance, you know, there were different modes of worship. So
So we don't generally worship Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi. We worship him in his Navadvip pastimes, you know, when, because there's some opulence involved in that. And in one sense, that's, you know, because it helps us to appreciate the Lord. We develop some awe and reverence. We can offer him different, you know, clothings and different items like that. As a sannyasi, it's a little different. It, you know, it's a different part again. And we are advised by the acharyas to worship him in the Navadvip mode, not the Jagannath Puri mode. It's you know, it's devised to help us as conditioned souls develop a proper appreciation of who the Lord is and, you know, how best to get his favor. So, I mean, you know, technical points like this, I certainly don't have the experience to be able to answer all these questions. All I can do is cite the fact that the previous acharyas, you know, have advised us, this is the way you do the worship. Now, I haven't specifically read, you know, why we worship Lord Chaitanya in the Navadvip mode rather than as a sannyasi. Maybe there is something that Prabhupada has said, and that's something that... Does anybody have any information on that?
In Shvetinadi Dhamma, Mahavira Swami, he mentioned something which I don't remember now, but I know it's there. But Vrita Purna Swami said that his associates from Navadvip, they didn't like that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyasa and he took these austerities. So these associates were all eternal gopis and gopas. So we're also following them. They don't like to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doing austerity because he's Supreme Lord.
Yeah, it's all it's all according to the mood of the acharyas and the associates of Lord Chaitanya. If they said worship Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi, then we can do it. But if they advise you worship in the Navadvip mode because we don't like to see him with his head shaved, yeah. Everybody was lamenting when Lord Chaitanya went and took sannyas, he shaved his head, gave up all his opulences and everything, and they were heartbroken because they loved Lord Chaitanya in it, you know, in his other mode. To see him renouncing everything, he's the Lord of the three worlds, he owns everything, why he has to renounce anything? That was one of their moves. So you see mixes. In one sense, so like in the modes of worship, you do see mixes. That on one hand, you know, Lord Chaitanya is worshipped as a devotee. But on the other hand, still there's a recognition that he is the Supreme Lord as well. But we don't go all the way in mixing the leelas. That Lord Chaitanya displayed certain leelas. And Lord Krishna, when he was Lord Krishna, he displayed certain other leelas. So we don't mix the two leelas together. Even though we know it's the same person. But he has a certain mood as Krishna and he has a certain mood as Lord Chaitanya. And we can't mix those together. Then that becomes a fault. That's rasa-bhasa. So we know, we can still worship Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord because we know that's who he is. And his associates recognize him as such. But still, you don't impose Krishna's leelas on Lord Chaitanya's leelas. That becomes a fault. There's a different mood. And that's what it's all about. It's all about rasa. It's all about, you know, exchange, relationship, affection. So we have to worship the Lord in the way that he wants to be worshipped, not, you know, according to our own ideas. All right. Okay, let's finish that. Shilla Prabhupada Ki.